You'll rust out before you wear out is the series title for our lectures. And we have a book that I have put together of health lectures, and it's available back here at American Gesette Ministries. It will have everything that I'm talking about today. Today, we're talking about, is obesity a brain disorder? And I know you want to know that, don't you? There is some current literature that we'll discuss concerning that. Now, yesterday we talked about the Great American Diet. We talked about Syndrome X, having high triglycerides, high sugar load, being pre-diabetic. There are several other factors that go with that. I would feel that about half the United States is pre-diabetic or have Syndrome X. If you are finding yourself having trouble losing weight like you used to, you are probably pre-Syndrome X. Today we're talking about, is obesity a brain disorder? Tomorrow, what I can tell you, almost every patient tells me, I'm tired. Is there something you can do for me? I'm just so tired. We're going to talk about the major causes for fatigue in the United States. On Thursday, we're going to talk about controversies in soy. Sometimes you read that soy is the greatest product on the face of the earth, and the next time you read it, it is the curse of the earth. Let's find out the truth. But before you don't go down to the Book and Bible House and buy your soy products, better see this lecture. So I don't think you're going to be too worried about getting your soy products. Friday, we're going to talk about my death experience, talk about the heart, being hard-hearted, and we're going to talk about your cholesterol. Now, I've asked that everybody give their prayer praises and prayer requests, and my girls, if you want to add to these, as well as questions, they will pass out the papers. We prayed over these prayers and prayer requests. There's two of them that I'd like to read to you. One of them is, I do not praise God for the cancer I had, but I do praise Him for the second chance at life and gaining the knowledge for better living. That's probably a very good coping mechanism, but may I just read you something from Ellen White? Absolutely nothing happens in the life of one of God's children that is not the will of God, and that we wouldn't have chosen for ourselves if we could see the end from the beginning. Did you get that? If you could see the end from the beginning, you would not have anything changed in your life path. Boy, that's tough. That's tough. Do you believe that? Another prayer praise. I've increased my exercise to 40 minutes a day, decreased my food intake, and my blood pressure medications 5 times in the last 6 months. My weight is down 9 pounds in the last 2 months. Isn't that exciting? I had a pastor tell me this morning that he was diagnosed with diabetes last fall at 300 pounds. He said, that was a wake-up call. I better do something about this. So, he got on the treadmill, he cut out all the cakes, he cut out the rice, he cut out the starches, the potatoes that he was eating so much of, and sure enough, he started losing weight. He was placed on blood sugar medicine, which he really didn't want to take, but he took it. After 2 months and losing 20 pounds, he was able to come off the blood pressure medication. As of today at Camp Mating, he's lost 58 pounds. He's exercising. He was up this morning at 5:30 going around the lake. Anybody meet him out there? He is basically, he said, I didn't realize it, but I became a vegan without realizing it. He cut out his milk, cheese, eggs. Yesterday we talked about cheese, and somebody asked me about me adding the ripened word before the cheese is not good for you that Mrs. White talked about. She actually did not mind soft cheese, cottage cheese. She had it in her house. And what I tried to explain yesterday was that when you take the whey out, which is the alkaline portion of the milk, milk being neutral, you get only acidic product, very acidic product. It's very hard for your body to digest. Takes a long time, almost as long as meat does, to digest in your small bowel. It also is very tough on your acid-base balance to neutralize that. And we find that a high cheese load over years will shorten your life because of the acidic load. So I've had Adventists say, if I eat cheese, I'm not going to heaven. Well, that's not what she said. She just wants you to be healthy and be aware. And how did she know that taking the whey out would make it more acidic and be harmful to you? How did she know that in 1870? Huh? And here we now have the proof and the scientific evidence to go with that. Yesterday we left off on my story as a five-generation Seventh-day Adventist, a third-generation Loma Linda Medical School graduate. And I tell you this story for a particular reason to get to today. I told you that my great-grandparents met at Andrews Battle Creek, where they were both taking the nursing training course. They fell in love and married. They had Frank, their son, and they decided they were going to Africa to stay there until Jesus came. They got to Africa. They developed a clinic there. People came from all around to visit this clinic. I have to tell you some of the humorous things that I was told throughout my life hearing these stories growing up, and I was able to verify these with letters that had been sent back from great-grandma Kerr, that the natives were so fascinated with these white people, because they'd never seen white people, that they would poke holes in the tent or in the thatched hut, wherever they were staying at the time, to look and watch them to make sure they were white all over. They loved to come into the hut and get into her trunk of clothes and put them on and button and unbutton her buttons. They were so fascinated with buttons. They would come up to her and they would open her mouth and look at her gold fillings. Just out of the clear blue sky. Do you think you could tolerate that? But you were there to tell people about Jesus. You were telling them about healthful living that you'd learned at Battle Creek. And it was found that they had, going over there on a sailboat, it took them almost 6 months to get to Africa. She was pregnant with little Francis, but didn't say that in her letters because she knew what would happen. The family would keep her from going to Africa as a missionary. The Home Missionary was a magazine at the time, said in July 1894 that this was the first Seventh-day Adventist mission for a pagan tribe. This was in Ghana, the Gold Coast. The medical work had begun to prosper, and many came from adjacent villages to receive treatment. The ultimate plan was for my great-grandfather Kerr to go back to Battle Creek, get his MD degree, come back, and establish a hospital. He asked for help from his relatives, and they sent $10,000 to the General Conference to be used for this new hospital. However, while they were waiting for that money to occur, and I am told the foundation of that hospital is still there, I told you that the worst happened, and you probably couldn't guess what it was. Little Francis died shortly after Frank died. And how Frank died is he had dysentery. And once a month they had to go to the coast, 40 miles, to get their supplies. And they both had to go. So they left little Frank after he'd recovered from his dysentery, still very weak, still just taking liquids, with the chief. And said, now, chief, whatever you do, do not give little Frank anything but this gruel. Frank, the chief said, I understand. He had taken him in like his own child. He'd put him on his shoulders and walk him all over the area. When they got back with supplies, they found little Frank on top of the chief's shoulders eating an ear of corn. He was dead in 36 hours from a perforated bowel, which almost died of. This was very grieving to them. Most of the whites in this area had been taken in and out. Pastor Hale, who was the mission director, had gone out and come back in with Blackwater fever, which is malaria. And the rule of thumb in the 1890s was, if you started spitting up blood, which is why it was black, what's blood in your gastric stomach becomes black. That's why we ask you when you've had change in stool and it's black, we think it's blood, we ask you those things as a physician when we're worried about whether you have a bleeding ulcer. When you start spitting up blood, the chance of you surviving is zero, because you would die. Great-grandpa Kerr started spitting up blood. The $10,000 had not gotten to him. This was before the General Conference was reorganized. The money was used elsewhere. He was very bitter over this. They went to South Africa to get the health back, and then they came back to Battle Creek shortly, where he was a physical therapist assistant with Dr. Kellogg, and then they moved to Arkansas. This is a picture that I'm told occurred one Sunday afternoon when a photographer came through Fort Smith, Arkansas. The Kerrs lost their first two children, but had six more. And the second to the left is my grandmother. She has a cat on her lap. That's Melissa Burrell. The youngest sitting on Grandma Kerr's lap is great-grandma Ruth, and she is still alive. She lives in Gentry on the Flint Creek, just across from Ozark Academy. We have a picture here of the 50th wedding anniversary of Grandpa Kerr and Grandma Kerr. I have to tell you, at this point, he'd left the church completely. He had no interest in anything. He was okay for the kids and mom to go to church, but he had no interest. He started smoking, he started drinking, he started staying out late. If anybody that I know personally would have ever committed the unpardonable sin, I would expect it to be Grandpa George Kerr, that was going to stay in Africa till Jesus came. I tell you this so you can understand where I'm coming from when I am passionate about what I say. I tell you this because we're family here today. So why is it important that I give you Bible texts? This is the covenant that I will make with them after those days, says the Lord. I will put my laws into their hearts. Put it where? Into their hearts. And in their minds will I write them. And their sins and inquiries will I remember no more. That's justification, is it not? Now, where remission of these is, there is no more offering for sin. That's blotting out of sin. Is that not the whole gospel that God wants to put in you before Jesus comes? Do you want a new heart? Do you want this old, crummy heart that we've got? Now, I'm talking spiritually and physically. Here's the Bailey Bunch in 1972. There are four of us, and we'll talk about them more later in the week. And we are all active in the Seventh-day Adventist Church. So, I have to tell you, I show you the picture of the family because my brother and I, who's a physician in Spokane, family practice, we're talking about our dysfunctional status as a family. Doesn't every family have some dysfunctional points? Kind of does, doesn't it? And we have one member of the family that likes to say, "Who said you have to be hungry to eat?" Because she'll eat any time. We're all dysfunctional to varying degrees until we actually become fully functional in heaven. Do you believe that? Some are much more dysfunctional and cannot cope in society. But most of us are coping relatively well. Our perplexing link with food, we love it. We hate that we love it. We eat it. We feel guilty that we ate it. We say we will never eat it again. And then, of course, we do. Sound familiar? Is that just poor willpower? Most people eat for comfort, not for nutrition or hunger in the United States. The most popular food, did you know it before I put it up there? Ice cream. That's the most popular food. You know what the most popular flavor is? No, it's vanilla. It's not chocolate. Chocolate second. Women prefer sweets after ice cream, and men prefer hot foods like pizza. Have you ever seen too many sweet commercials? during the football game? No, it's pizza commercials. So we ask this question. Is food your idol? Can ice cream redeem a bad day? Is chocolate your best friend? Do French fries really relieve loneliness? We eat a supersized lunch because it fills that emptiness inside for a few minutes. Or does it? We dive into the refrigerator because it's easier than standing up to the boss or dealing with the family. Sound familiar? Satan is the originator of the disease, and the physician is warring against his work and power. Sickness of the mind prevails everywhere. 9/10 of diseases from which men suffer have their foundation here. When I was in medical school, I said, no, that's impossible. Now that I've been in practice for a while, I say, yeah, that's probably right. That's probably right. So really what I'm dealing with is only 10% of you. The 9/10 of you, we have to give you a new heart spiritually and mentally and physically. We cannot just deal with fixing your hardening the arteries with a balloon angioplasty or giving you a bypass. We need to give you a new mind. Does not God promise us that? Does dopamine play a role in obesity? The current literature suggests so. Dopamine is a brain chemical associated with addiction. We've seen dopamine can be addictive to cocaine, alcohol, and other drugs. So does it have to do with eating too? I have a neuron here. Now, I have to explain some physiology so you can understand what we're talking about. It's very interesting to note that most people think when your brain tells you to do something, there's electricity runs down to your hand and then you do it. Is that how it works? No. Yes, there's electricity inside that nerve cell. But when the nerve cell gets to the end of the nerve cell, it doesn't stay electricity. When it abuts up to the next nerve cell, it becomes a chemical. It jumps the gap with that chemical and then proceeds down as electricity again through that cell. Now, true, some of the nerve cells in your back can be up to 6 feet long, but most of them are not and are very short. And you can do things and comprehend what I'm telling you in microseconds because of these neurotransmitters that are in your brain and in your body. Acetylcholine is the most common one. Dopamine is one of them. Serotonin is another one. But did you know that in your brain, at any one moment, there are 5,000 different chemicals jumping those gaps? Any one of those chemicals being out of balance, too much, too low, and you're crazy. I'm being serious. You will be unbalanced if any of those chemicals are not balanced totally appropriately. So do we believe in evolution with this? Totally impossible, because you miss one chemical in one part of your brain and the organism ceases to function. We've got over 5,000 that we've discovered, and they last for microseconds, and then they're gone. So we have a surface here of a cell, an electron, and the electricity comes down the electron, and there are little packets of neurotransmitters, and they then jump the gap, and then on the other side, they then become electricity again, and they dissipate. So we have drugs to stop the absorption. We have drugs to increase the secretion to try to make you more sane and happy. When you would make yourself more sane and happy by following this diet that we're presenting this week. Here is an electron microscope of that nerve ending, and you can see all the little round neurotransmitter packets in there that have all the chemical in there that will jump across that gap. So dopamine triggers feelings of satisfaction and pleasure. This is why it's very popular with drug addicts. Obese people have fewer dopamine receptors, as do drug addicts. Obese people eat more to try and stimulate the dopamine pleasure circuits in their brain, just as drug addicts try to increase their dopamine levels through drugs. Now, here is the brain. The pleasure centers are the hippocampus. Did you know you had a hippocampus in your brain? Not a hippopotamus, a hippocampus. There are several other brain pleasure centers there, but it's right there in the middle of your brain. And that is the pleasure center. What is the reason behind this compulsive behavior? PET scanners, positron electron transmission scans, show fewer dopamine receptors as the body mass index increases, just like they see in addicts. So, is overeating a consequence or a cause of obesity? So it's glandular, right? And you can't help it? Over 50% of Americans are overweight or obese. Most adults consume only 100 calories more than 20 years ago. And the fat in our diet has dropped from 42% to 34% on the average in the United States. So why are we gaining weight? Here's one of the reasons. The problem now seems to be a way of life so sedentary that it involves little more than a few steps each day. From car to office, from office to car, to house to garage, to the house, to the sofa, to the television. No exercise. Exercise causes increased brain blood flow and stimulates dopamine pleasure and satisfaction circuits. Exercise improves overall health and produces the endorphin motivation that an addictive behavior needs for change. You'll rust out before you wear out. As I said yesterday, I must tell that to my patients at least once, twice, three times a day. I have a big sign over each of the treadmills that we use at the hospital and at the office that says, "You'll rust out before you wear out." And after we finish a good treadmill, I said, "Okay, now you're cleared to exercise. I want you to continue this." They said, "Well, I've got a treadmill at home." And I says, "How much clothes and how much dust has it got on it?" "Well, you're right." I said, "I want you to hook it up to the TV. The TV won't work unless you're on it." The more we exercise, the better will be the circulation of the blood. More people die for want of exercise than through over fatigue. Very more will rust out than wear out. No, I wasn't original in that title. I stole it from Mrs. White in 1870. We are more dependent upon the air we breathe than the food we eat. Men and women, young and old, who desire health and who would enjoy active life should remember that they cannot have these without a good circulation. How did she know about exercise and circulating your blood chemicals and getting you off your tush, making you feel better, back in 1870? That was not the standard back then. Another proven way to stimulate dopamine receptors is through prayer. Did you know that? Meditative prayer. Why does God say pray constantly? He wants your dopamine levels to be high. He wants you to have this pleasure and having a happy disposition. How many have seen one of the best displays of roses here on the campus? Have you seen those roses? We have been to multiple rose gardens, and I've had people say, "Well, the Biltmore House, which is not far from here, Vanderbilt's house, the largest private residence in the United States, has nice roses." Yes, they're very old roses from the turn of the century, and they've tried to keep them that way. They're not like these. We've gone to the Arboretum, North Carolina Arboretum. Beautiful roses, but they're not as pretty as these at Lake Junaluska. Do you sit and revel at the marvel of all those colors, the smell? Are you happy at the smallest things? Do you look at things and listen to the birds and be cheerful inside? Do you know when you do those little things that gives you pleasure, that increases your dopamine level? Did you know that? And when your dopamine level is increased, so is your serotonin level, and that's our happy chemical. God said in 1 Thessalonians 5:16 to 18, "Rejoice always, pray constantly, give thanks in all circumstances, for this is the will of God in Jesus Christ for you." Would God tell us to do something that wasn't good for us? He knows that that would stimulate your brain function. Now, I've got a picture here of an inside of an aorta. I had one of my patients tell me that I needed to pray for him in the prayer request because he's needing an aortic aneurysm resection, because the aorta has gotten stretched like socks that don't have any more elastic. And when it gets too big, it's like a balloon. It will burst. This is an aorta of a 19-year-old. What do you see there? Is it smooth? No, it's lumpy bumpy. What we found in Korea during the Korean War, when our boys would come back in body bags, when they were checked, because they were already starting to eat the great American diet, they already had plaque on their aortas. This is how it starts. We can reverse that with diet and exercise and a happy disposition. Overeating has a worse effect upon the system than overworking. Did you hear that? You'll rust out before you wear out. The energies of the soul are more effectively prostrated by intemperate eating than by intemperate work. New studies show a low caloric intake gives you longer life and a healthier life. So yes, you can live longer and feel better. The risk factors for heart disease, some of them have not changed. Hypertension, high cholesterol, high triglycerides. Diabetes, smoking, sedentary lifestyle. Homocysteine, that's one we've added. Homocysteine, when it's high, appears to be more toxic to you, to the lining of the blood vessels, than cholesterol is. Cooked cholesterol, oxidized cholesterol. The bad LDL. But homocysteine, how do you have a high homocysteine? You do what many of my mountain folk patients do. They eat a meat and potatoes only kind of diet. When was the last time you had a piece of fruit? I think it was at Christmas. 5 years ago. I have to have my meat and I have to have my potatoes. I'm not having anything else. Do you think their body is acidic? Do you wonder why their wife is ending up being a widow for 40 years? Because they've eaten a meat and potatoes kind of diet. And it has caused their homocysteine to go sky high. How do you reverse homocysteine? Real simple. More fresh fruits and vegetables, high in folic acid. If you eat a lot of fresh fruits and vegetables, it'll increase your homocysteine, it'll increase your folic acid level, and your homocysteine will go back to normal. It will not be an issue. So you need some water. Well, we heard on CNN last Friday that you don't need so much water. You can get your water in all kinds of juices and milk and all that kind of stuff. Don't believe it. Adventist Health Studies, and we'll do that this week, just came out 2 weeks ago explaining how they've found that in the Adventist Health Study itself, those that had over 5 glasses of water a day had a 50-plus less chance of having a heart attack. Dying from the heart attack, not a heart attack. Dying from the heart attack. But you know what? Even though those risk factors are awful and we can modulate most of them, there's a new one. They've actually added this. The American Heart Association has added this as a risk factor. It's called central obesity. Did you know that? Central obesity. Ooh, that one's tough, isn't it? When I was growing up, it seemed that everybody that was in charge in the general conference level had what I called a GC front. They looked like they were about ready to deliver a baby. That is a risk factor now for sudden death. It's a risk factor for heart disease, heart attacks, strokes. The rule of thumb is a woman's waist larger than 32 inches and a man's larger than 37 inches had double the risk of heart disease, 50% more likely to have increased cholesterol, and 50% more likely to have high blood pressure than their slimmer counterparts. Women with waist greater than 36 inches were 5 times more likely to develop diabetes than those with waist about 26 inches. Abdominal fat causes insulin resistance, which means that your cells don't respond to insulin and your blood sugar stays dangerously high. It unbalances your hormones. Women with breast cancer had 45% more belly fat. Women with larger waists have 20 to 50% more back problems. Now that's simple logic, isn't it? Belly fat can crowd your lungs, causing breathing difficulties, wheezing, coughing from regurgitation of food, shortness of breath from smaller lung volumes and aspiration of stomach contents. It can cause sleep apnea, which increases the risk for heart attacks and strokes by fourfold, 400%. Early habits are lifelong habits. Do you have any habits? Why is it that some obese people find themselves compelled to eat when they become emotionally disturbed?
They get angry or depressed, and then they go to the refrigerator as a way of coping. I have patients tell me that they wouldn't be fat if it were not for their compulsion to bury their disappointment under a stuffed stomach. This is not the only reason for obesity, mind you, but human tendency to accept conditioning is extraordinary. We're being conditioned right now with soldiers in our airports. For what, I'm not sure, but we are we not? We just see them and we don't think of anything. We're being conditioned. When a baby is breastfed, there are physical limitations to how often and when he, she can nurse. With a bottle-fed baby, the bottle becomes a mighty convenient babysitter. An emotionally disturbed child can be quieted by simply poking a synthetic nipple in his or her mouth. As the food goes in, the tension and anxiety goes out. An angry child can be pacified by a pacifier or bottle. A child can be put to sleep with food. You can purchase for yourself a reprieve for almost anything through food. As the food goes in, Michael, can you back that one up? Thank you. As the food goes in, the tension and anxiety goes out. I couldn't do this without Michael. You know, he's my 14-year-old whiz kid that's got this all put together for me. He's come from church with me to do this, and I greatly appreciate him back there in the crow's nest. So as the food goes in, the tension and anxiety goes out. An angry child can be pacified by a pacifier bottle. Okay. A child can be put to sleep with food. You can purchase yourself a reprieve for almost anything through food. What have we done to this child? Not only is he or she failing to learn self-control, they are learning to cope by putting something in their mouth. Many obese people have no desire for food early in the day. But as the day's responsibilities mount, their nervousness drives them to food. Late at night, the refrigerator becomes their emotional support. The first sin involved eating, did it not? So, the devil's first temptation to Jesus involved food. It took Christ 40 days, and that was one of the things he had to overcome for us. 40 days for Christ. Are you going to do this overnight? You're going to be motivated when you leave here at camp meeting. You're going to do the right thing. But just like any week of prayer, you're motivated for a while. That's why we have to change the habits. To allow, much less encourage, lack of self-control in any area is to condition the child or the adult to be generally intemperate. So what are we to do? I can't help it. I'm made this way. That's what I hear. You are not able of yourself to bring your purposes and desires and inclination into submission to the will of God. Did you hear that? You are not able to do this. You're not able to overcome these habits. But God, if you are willing to be made willing, God will accomplish this work for you. Do you believe that? Have you prayed about this? Have you asked Him for victory over this? Have you knelt at your bedside with your promise open on in your Bible? And have you prayed until it didn't matter anymore? Have you developed calluses on those knees? Now, I told you that I would show you some of the latest technology. This is an artificial left ventricular assist device. Right now, this is helping people get through till they can have a transplant. And we're finding the survival rate of this is 52% versus 26% when we just try to treat them with drugs alone, getting them through for a transplant. Obesity is linked to cancer of the uterus, breast, kidney, colon, and gallbladder. Now, if you want to write this down, this is how to figure out if you're obese. It's also in the book a couple times, my lectures. Multiply your weight in pounds times 705. All right, got that one? Now, divide that number by your weight, or your height in inches, excuse me. Divide that number by your height in inches. Then divide it again by your height in inches, and this equals your body mass index. It should be less than 25. Between 25 and 30, you are overweight. Over 30, you're obese, as per the American Heart Association. But just to let you know, this doesn't match for people that are very muscular, very young, pregnant, or a frail elderly person. You're not going to use that criteria. One reason for aging is increased insulin secretion. The higher the oxidative insulin levels, the more resistant you have, thus increasing your damaging sugar levels that attach to everything. Now, like anything else in your body, when you get too much of it, you excrete it in your urine or your stool, but not sugar. Yes, some of it does come out in your urine, and some of it does come out in your stool. But it attaches sugar anywhere there's a spare spot. So instead of having a nice, smooth cell surface, you will have a sugar molecule sitting there. And instead of having one sugar molecule over time, you'll have hundreds of them. And it will be very lumpy bumpy, more likely to develop a scab or a clot because it's irregular. And the sugar then is attached to everything. Brain cells, nerve cells, eyes, hands, kidneys, heart. We know that diabetes accelerates hardening the arteries by 10 to 15 years, as does smoking. Just as bad. Calorie restriction extends life and health span. It appears now, for those that are looking for the longevity of life and live forever, there are non-Christians that are doing this, and they're constantly in the research. They have found that the less insulin you secrete in your lifetime, the longer you will live. Do I need to say that again? The less insulin that your body is required to use, the longer you will live. So if you put less calories in, you'll need less insulin. The less insulin you have, the less resistance you're going to get, and the better you will be. I have patients say, well, I'm going to die anyway sometime. I might as well die happy eating. We haven't let God overcome if that's our attitude. Most people enjoy better health while eating two meals a day than three. Now, did she know about low-calorie intake, decreasing insulin, and making you live longer? How did Ellen White know that in 1890? She said two meals are better than three. Wow. How did she know that? The food industry has advertised low-fat and no-fat foods and substituted fat for sugar. Highly processed carbohydrates with their fiber removed cause a sharp spike in blood glucose and therefore high insulin levels. Elevated insulin results in the storage of excess glucose as fat and a rapid decline in blood sugar causing symptoms of reactive hypoglycemia, again then contributing to food cravings. You wonder why at 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock, you've got to go find that Snicker bar. They advertise it. That'll help your food craving. Well, your problem appears to be that you're not getting enough of the right kind of foods, and you're spiking. You're going up real quick and back down real quick. Women suffer twice the incidence of diabetes as men. Nearly every case of adult onset diabetes, type 2 diabetes, is preventable. This is insulin resistant at the fat cell level. Not all of them, but almost all of them. At any given time, 25% of men and 40% of women are dieting to lose weight. Did you know that? 90% of all women who lose the weight will regain it in 5 years. Now that's bad. You say, well, that's bad willpower. No, we haven't given it to God. Yo-yo dieting does more harm than good. Every new weight gain leaves you with a new supply of fat cells just waiting to be filled. Multiple studies have now shown that low-fat, vegetable-centered diets, low sugar, high fiber, can be used to treat and prevent disease. But we have known this, haven't we? In Exodus 15:26, if thou wilt diligently hearken to the voice of the Lord thy God, and wilt give ear to his commandments, and keep all his statutes, I will put none of these diseases upon thee, which I have brought upon the Egyptians, for I am the Lord that healeth thee. Not only did God want to give them a new heart and a new mind, He took them away from their McDonald's type diet in Egypt and gave them manna, which they didn't like. And that brings me to a story I have to tell you. Weimar has been around for a long time, and they tell this story about the first night that they had the people in for the 21-day weight loss program. And they had this big banquet, and they had the food laid out, beautiful array of fresh fruits and vegetables, grains, in all kinds of fashion. And the people ate it, and they said it was awful. It's like eating cardboard. I can't stand this. But they stayed, and they got through the 21 days, and they had a goodbye banquet. And they had this luscious layout, and they ate it, and they said, oh, boy, this is the most wonderful food I've ever eaten. Why couldn't you serve this at the beginning of the program? This is much, much better than what we had at the beginning of the program. And they said, this is exactly the same what we had at the beginning of the program. You have changed. Your tastes have changed. And that goes for anything, whether it's sweets, sugar, salt, or anything that you're craving. It may take you longer than 21 days. It may take you 6 months. But if you give the salt, when people just pour the salt on without tasting, when they give the salt a chance and take it away for 30 days, which will lower your blood pressure, for every molecule of water you, for every molecule of salt you eat, your body will retain a molecule of water, and that will increase your blood pressure. You cut out the salt, which is the first thing we usually do for hypertension, then many of the patient's blood pressures will come back to normal. Well, they cut out the salt. 30 days later, they go back to eating like they were, and they go, oh, this is terrible. It's too salty. How did I ever eat that stuff? You can do this, and you can stay tight. If you can change it long enough, it will not taste good to you anymore. The things of the world will become dim. The brain is affected by the condition of the stomach. Did you know they were connected? Did you know that in the bowel, we have almost every single chemical that the brain puts out duplicated? Did you know that? Your bowel is a second brain. I think they may do some of the same things, but the literature says they do different things, but they're exactly the same chemical makeup. The brain is affected by the condition of the stomach. A disordered stomach is productive of a disordered, uncertain state of mind. A diseased stomach produces a diseased condition of the brain and often makes one obstinate in maintaining erroneous opinions. The supposed wisdom of such a one is foolishness with God. And you know, when she was writing this, she was writing about board meetings at church. You ever had somebody stick to the opinion? You wonder what they had for supper that night. An upset stomach can make an upset brain. They, preachers, said were in health reform in name only. The preachers have no rules by which to regulate their diet, but indulge in eating fruits and nuts between meals and thus impose too heavy burden upon the digestive organs. Some eat three meals a day when two would be more conducive to physical and spiritual health. If the laws which God has made to govern the physical system are violated, the penalty must surely follow. What's the penalty? Dying early. She knew that. She knew that, that if you ate three meals a day, you would die sooner. Wow. How'd she know that in 1902? Many of my patients eat poorly out of habit or eat for comfort due to stress. I need you to put this quote on your heart. We haven't done it yet today. Can we say it all together? Worry is blind and cannot discern the future. Well, thank you, Michael. Just jump to the next picture. In every difficulty, he has his way prepared to bring relief. Our Heavenly Father has 1,000 ways to provide for us of which we know nothing. Those who accept the one principle of making the service and honor of God supreme will find perplexities vanish and a plain path before their feet. Do you believe that? Are you putting that on your heart this week so that you can, that habits can be changed and you can feel better, live longer, have a new heart, a new mind? All right, I promised you some new things. This is one of the very first people done in the United States, a bypass by a robot. This was done last summer in the Presbyterian Hospital in New York. And they put three holes where those X's are. And that's all they did to do his open heart surgery. This is a doctor. He is sitting in front of the computer with the, manipulating the tiny little robot arms in another room. He's not in that room. Now, just so that you wouldn't worry, there are people standing by in case there's a problem. They can open him up right away and rescue the patient. But the patient is underneath all that plastic, and they're watching this whole procedure up on the TV screen. And this is a, they're now doing, they've done over 50 of these. The next time you're in a lousy mood, depressed, angry, frustrated, lonely, or anxious, and you feel like you're going to reach for that snack, you need to ask yourself, why do you want that brownie? Is it because you feel low? Then remind yourself it won't make you feel any better. Do something that will make you feel better. See a friend, listen to music, take a walk, smell the roses. Don't eat the snack. With repetition, this can become a new habit. Now, there are some good mood-boosting foods, and we went over some of them yesterday. Avocado is one of them. It has B6, folic acid. It stimulates the mood by enhancing the neurotransmitter serotonin. Barley. Barley has B1, which calms and relieves tension. We use barley green at home. Brewer's yeast. These flakes are high in chromium. You should use them instead of Parmesan cheese on your lasagna or on your spaghetti. Stress, it has stress B vitamins that help depression. And omega-3, which we talked about. Omega-3 is essential. I want every one of you to start taking omega-3. I want you to take flaxseed or something in that family. Now, my non-vegetarian friends, I will let you take the fish oil that you can get at the vitamin section of any grocery store. And that's fine, but you have to understand, when they put these fish oil together, it's got a lot of omega-3, which is wonderful, but it's also very concentrated, and if there happens to be a lot of mercury around, you could be mercury toxic from that. But the vegetarian source that I recommend is flaxseed. It will help fight depression. Ask God to help you understand what triggers your emotional eating. Do you constantly deal with the same issues? God can help. No matter what you're facing, he will give you wisdom if you ask. If any of you lack wisdom, let him ask of God that giveth to all men liberally. That's one you need to have marked and worn out in your Bible that you can pray in front of and remember that and pray constantly over. God promises to carry your load. As difficult as it sometimes is, God wants us to praise him in all circumstances. You can find that in Philippians 2:14. Not just when things are going well, not when you've got cancer or dying of Crohn's disease. Instead of grabbing that junk food, ask God what he wants you to learn in this healing process. Put God back in the position he deserves in your life. Jesus said, I am the bread of life. He who comes to me shall never hunger. Do you believe that? I didn't hear that very well. Oh, thank you. I thought everybody would fall asleep. When you feel overwhelmed with life stresses, spend some quiet time with God. What I tell my patients, instead of watching TV at night, I want you to go out and walk the spouse or walk the dog. I want you to get out. And in our neighborhood, there are no sidewalks, so I tell them to watch the cars because I don't want them to come up in the emergency room with an accident. But I want them to get some fresh air and some exercise. And this is the best thing they can do for their health. When you talk with God about your troubles and fears, he provides with you true comfort at absolutely zero calories. Do you believe that? Now I want to answer some questions that you gave to me. First off, yesterday we talked about acid-forming food and alkaline-forming food, and I want to go over some of the list. Acid-forming food, all meat products. And fish. Rice, brown or white. Cornmeal, oats, rye, spelt, wheat, bran. Popcorn, pastas. Now, we had popcorn last night, but we also put brewer's yeast on it, which I hope neutralized the, because it's alkaline. I hope that neutralized it. Breads, most other grains, products like cereal, hot and cold, crackers and pastries. The following beans are acidic. Unless they're sprouted, then they're alkaline. Pinto, navy, mung, lentils, black, garbanzos, red, white, and broad bean. Cheese. Parmesan is the worst. It's the sharpest of the cheeses. They've taken out all the alkali. It's very acidic. Sunflower and pumpkin seeds, wheat germ. The following nuts. Walnuts, which are high in omega-3. Unfortunately, they're acid for me. So you got to be moderation in all things, folks. Pecans, cashews, dried coconut. Although fresh coconut is alkaline. Pistachios, macadamias, filberts, Brazil nuts, and peanuts. Almonds, Mrs. White said, was the most perfect nut. It's the only alkaline nut. Alcoholic drinks, coffee, caffeinated beverages. I had somebody ask a question yesterday about caffeine-free sodas. Is it okay? Well, problem is, usually it's artificial sweeteners, which is worse than the sugar. And we'll get into that about artificial sweeteners. But there is phosphoric acid in soda. Remember we used to call it phosphate drinks? Phosphates? I go down to the soda fountain and get a phosphate. Oh, maybe I'm too old for you to know that. Okay. It's acidic. It's very acidic. And we've found that it thins bones. The more phosphate soda drinks they have, it unbalances the calcium. So here's the routine. There is usually two phosphorus for one calcium to neutralize that. Now, this is a very simple chemical formula. If there's no calcium available in your bloodstream, where is it going to get that extra calcium? Your bones! And what happens after years and years of drinking carbonated beverages? You got osteoporosis, and you're going to end up being one in a six out of Americans that are going to get osteoporosis and break a hip. Most forms of sweeteners, including artificial sweeteners, cane sugar, beet sugar, barley syrup, processed honey, but not centrifuged honey. Processed honey is acid. Centrifuged honey is not. Maple syrup, molasses, fructose, and lactose. Refined table sugar, soy sauce, mustard, ketchup, unless they're both homemade. Mayonnaise, unless it's natural and homemade. Vinegar, nutmeg. Heard that one before, haven't we? Tobacco and practically all drugs. All right, what's alkaline? All vegetables. All fruits except for blueberries, plums, prunes, and cranberries. Even citrus fruits, such as lemons, that we think of being acidic, are alkaline-producing in the body. They are rich in organic salts like citrates, which are converted into bicarbonates. Beans such as string, soy, lima, green, and snap. Peas, potatoes, arrowroot, grains such as flax, millet, quinona, nuts like almonds, fresh coconut, chestnut, sprouted seeds of any kind, unsprouted sesame, fresh unsalted butter, milk, cream, goat's milk, eggs, whey, plain yogurt, sweeteners like unpasteurized honey, dried sugarcane juice, sucranet, brown rice syrup, fruit juices, all vegetable juices, most herb teas, garlic, cayenne pepper, gelatin, most all herbs, miso, most vegetables, and unprocessed sea salt. Somebody asked me the difference between sea salt and regular salt. Sea salt's going to be concentrated, and as long as they didn't concentrate it with a lot of poisons and toxins like mercury in the water, it's going to have more trace minerals in it, including iodine, so it's going to be superior. Most spices, vanilla extract, brewer's yeast, and most unprocessed cold-pressed oils are neutral or alkaline-forming. I hope that answers that question. Now, I had a good question. Ellen White says no chemicals are to be put in our body. Why do Adventists prescribe drugs? Well, I did a research a few years ago on all the drugs mentioned in Ellen White's writings. The most popular drugs used from 1820 to 1920s are the follows. No other drugs were mentioned. Chamomile, mercury, arsenic, opium, quinine, strychnine, tobacco, alcohol. Also mentioned, usually on the same page, tea, coffee, spices, and flesh meats. Ever heard of those being tough on you? 9 out of 10, this is in Second Selected Messages 288,
9 out of 10 cases of sickness can recover without drugs. What about the other 10%? Maybe that's what I'm doing, taking care of those 10%. Physicians should diminish the use of drugs. She does not say, never use drugs. She says they should diminish the use of drugs. Administered wisely, not as dangerous as otherwise thought. Second Selected Messages 283. Drug medication, as it is generally practiced in 1890, I added that part, is a curse. Drugs need seldom be used. Again, she didn't say never. Okay, I had a patient tell me, or a patient, I say I'm in the mode here. I'm going to see patients. I had a camp meeting person tell me that he quit smoking 45 days ago by going through the program. And he wanted to know what happens to his body. So I'm going to tell you, assuming that I can find it. And I'll answer another question while I'm looking for it. What is the role of enzymes in digestion, and does fresh vegetable juice help? Yes, fresh vegetable juice can help, but when you're taking, again, when you're juicing, you're not getting any of the fiber, and that's really important. So yes, you can use some juicing, but I wouldn't make that the whole of what you eat. Find smoking in there for me. 72, thank you. All right, I appreciate that. I'm going to, you know, we've rearranged the chapters in this edition of the book. It wasn't a smaller edition. I added 12 chapters, and I'm still getting used to where all the typos are. I have to tell you about this little book. Ellen White talked about in the second volume of Spiritual Gifts, about page 188, when she developed this cancer on her eye. And she was real worried about it, losing her vision. She said it was from reading proof sheets for 7.5 years of the Review and Herald. She was the only one to proof them. And she said it would just about blinded her, and I could see why she'd say that. So any of you that get these, I've added the typos free. So after 45 days, what do we have? Coughing, sinus congestion, fatigue, and shortness of breath decrease. The cilia cells regrow in the lungs, increasing the ability to move mucus, cleaning the lungs out and reducing infection. The body overall energy levels rise. At 1 year, there's an excess risk of coronary disease is half of what it is for a smoker. At 5 years, lung cancer rate for the average former smoker, one pack a day, drops by one half. The stroke risk is reduced to that of a non-smoker 5 to 15 years after quitting. The risk of cancer of the mouth, throat, and esophagus is half of that of the smokers. Within 10 years, the lung cancer death rate is similar to that of non-smokers. Precancerous cells are replaced. The risk of cancer of the mouth, throat, esophagus, bladder, kidney, and pancreas is reduced. At 15 years of stopping smoking, the risk of coronary disease is that of a non-smoker. So the basic strategies for quitting smoking is stay positive, picture success, take a deeper breath, and work out, and keep yourself busy. I have many patients who use toothpicks, and they have destroyed a forest one toothpick at a time because they keep their mouth busy, but they have stopped the smoking. And again, this is a thing that God can help you overcome. I have patients tell me, and I have people at church tell me, good Seventh-day Adventists, that we can't overcome everything in this life. Do you believe that? I'm going to tell you about temper that I overcame. I'm going to show you pictures of that and how I was probably quite dangerous at one point. If he can overcome smoking, if he can overcome temper, if he can overcome diet, why can't he overcome everything else in your life? Now, here. So people say, well, I've not seen anybody walking around perfect. The further you are away from the mark, the less likely you will see it. The closer you get to the mark, the bigger and imposing it is. Those that are not looking to change will not see the change that's needed to be done. What causes varicose veins? Varicose veins are usually from long-standing and constipation.
or having a baby, because the baby sits on all those returned blood vessels. And it could be inherited. Mom had it, you had it. Can you get rid of bone loss? Yes, you can, with rejuvenating your diet. It may take a lot longer than doing it with drugs, and we can do it with drugs. And I will show you some natural things that you can get at the drugstore that will help you with your bone loss later this week. Chewing gum with sugar, can it affect your health? Yes, especially if you're doing it all the time. It's like having any other sugar load. It's like having a Snickers bar. Eating for your blood type, is there any validity to it? I think it's interesting. I think there's some good concepts in it. Do I think it matches your blood type? No. Neither do any of my colleagues. Best diet for colitis. Now, it depends if your colitis, that's inflammation of the large bowel, is active right now. If it's active, you need to stay with the soft rat diet, probably, the rice, potatoes, and applesauce. If you're not active, the best thing you can do to make that bowel healthy is go with the highest fiber diet you can have. And an easy way to lose weight, I'm telling you two things here at once, and help that fiber diet, high fiber diet, when you have colitis, is to have bunny food. That's what you're eating most of. I tell my patients, they want to know, can I have a hamburger? I said, after you finish all your vegetables and fruit, then you can, if you have room left, you can have your hamburger. And of course, they don't have any room left. They say, well, that isn't fair. I said, sure it is. I want you to be healthy. I'm trying to get you to change. So carrots, celery, radishes, cauliflower, raw, and broccoli. Have those spears available. Have them there to eat. And that will help, one, fiber, two, your well-being. It will also help your colitis if it is not active. If it's active, we may have to treat it with medication to get you better. Now, somebody asked, what's the difference between unstable angina and angina or stable angina? Unstable angina. When somebody has a blockage, it's like a governor. It will not let enough oxygen flowing blood through that narrowing. There are people that have had narrowings for a long time, and they know that they can get from the house to the mailbox without chest pain. But if they don't stop and rest and give it a little time, then the chest pain will come back. That's stable angina. If all of a sudden you can't make it to the mailbox like you always have for the last weeks and months, that's unstable. You have a new lesion. You have a new narrowing that is restricting the blood flow. And you better be aware of that because it can develop into a full-blown heart attack. That's the difference between stable and unstable. So stable would be hardening of the arteries that is a stable lesion, smooth, narrowed, but smooth. Unstable would be probably having a clot or a scab on it, which is unstable and very risky for you. How to overcome depression? Well, we've mentioned some of it here. It's very hard when you are depressed to have a happy attitude because the chemicals aren't right in your brain. And some of the best thing I can know to do is increase your water. And what we found is if you go 50% raw vegetables, 50%, and add omega-3. Now, the problem with adding omega-3 is it's going to take 4 to 6 months to take effect. It's not going to do it overnight, but it will help. It'll make a big difference in you long term. And they found 4-month trials in depression patients had a marked improvement. In fact, when they did it double blind, they stopped the study and made them put everybody on omega-3 because it was such a difference. All right. What about bad osteoporosis or fibromyalgia for the last 15 years and don't sleep well? One of the worst things to add to fibromyalgia is not sleeping. Fibromyalgia, by the American College of Rheumatology Association, is having at least 6 points of tenderness in the muscle group. Unfortunately, most people are misdiagnosed when they're diagnosed with fibromyalgia. They actually probably have a high spinal cord injury pattern. They probably have a narrowing at C1 or C2 in the cervical spine that's pinching on the spinal column. Or they even have a narrowing up higher at the foramen magnum level, the big window at the base of your skull, that is too tight congenitally. They may have had a whiplash that triggered that. They may have had some injury pattern that makes that. And it can only get worse if this has been going on for a long time.
the name that you want to look up on the internet to research this, to see if you really have fibromyalgia or do you have actually a mechanical problem that can be surgically fixed, is called Chiari syndrome or malformation. C-H-I-A-R-I. If you have any neurologic manifestations with your fibromyalgia, in other words, you have foot drop, you have lack of gag reflex, you don't have a blink reflex, that you have difficulty swallowing, anything neurologic, you can't stand with your eyes closed, those kind of things, you do not have fibromyalgia. You probably have a high spinal cord pinch, and it needs to be evaluated. As far as osteoporosis, exercise. But if we can get you a good night's sleep, you can help that fibromyalgia. I've found so many patients can live with their disease a lot better if they have a good night's sleep. All of us can do that for anything that ails us. So a good night's sleep. Don't eat for 4 hours before you go to bed. You might need some herbal tea to help you sleep. And it's not necessarily the tea that makes you sleep, it's the hot. So if you want hot water, that'll work. Let's get you down and try to get you to sleep. If you have somebody there with you that could massage those achy things so that you don't hurt as much, that will help as well. Drugs probably aren't going to help it. They may get you by, but they're going to keep you from sleeping unless you're taking sleeping medicine. I meant pain medicine. Could some of the cases of Alzheimer's be mad cow disease? Yes, they certainly are, and they've already been diagnosed as such. They have explained many of them away as they ate outside of the country. My mother has a good friend that she went to school with that was a quasi-Adventist and lived in Glendale, California and in Paris. She died a horrible death of mad cow in Glendale. So it's been reported. Now, how can we actually tell if it's mad cow disease? Can't until you go in there and take a biopsy, and they're trying to develop some tests for that. So, you know, we talked about cheese and soft cheese and hard cheese. That's another reason probably you want to stay away from milk products if you're worried about mad cow disease. There are other problems with milk, as well as allergies. You know, the number one cause for sinus drainage? Milk. I had patients that stopped it for their stomach and found out their nose quit running. And they said, you know, my nose has run for 30 years, and you're the first doctor to get it to stop. I went to all these doctors, and it was really just a milk allergy. What effect does having a no gallbladder, having your gallbladder out, have on your digestion? Actually, very little, other than once you take it out, it's no longer there to catch all the bile, which helps you digest fats. So instead of waiting till you see a trigger, food, smell food, start to eat food, the gallbladder then will squeeze and push the bile out into your small intestine to help you digest. It's very alkaline. The stomach is acidic, and it will push that out to help digest. What happens immediately after gallbladder resection, because the gallbladder is sick, is the bile just trickles out all the time. And occasionally, patients will get the bile coming up into their throats, and occasionally they'll get diarrhea because the bile is caustic, and it can cause you to have diarrhea. We can stop that with some medication, and usually the body will adjust to that, and it will trickle out all your life. And that seems to be okay. It doesn't make life longer or shorter. As we have these prayer requests and prayer praises, we will be praying over them again. I want you to know and put on your heart that worry is blind and can't discern the future. I want you to know that God promises you a new heart and a new mind. And that means overcoming everything in your life, including appetite, that seems so impossible. And I want you to know that all these promises are here for you. That if you really believe in Jesus, that they will become yours and be put on your heart.
You've been listening to another special American Cassette Ministries presentation. This is a digital recording for optimum sound quality. International copyright 2002, American Cassette Ministries. All rights reserved. For additional cassettes by this speaker, or for a free catalog of other American Cassette Ministry cassettes, please contact us as follows. To order toll-free in the United States and Canada, dial 800-233-4450. For international calls, dial 717-652-7000. For fax orders, dial 717-652-9050. Our internet email address is info@americancassette.org. Other cassettes may also be ordered from our secure website at www.americancassette.org. Our entire catalog is online, and we accept MasterCard, Visa, and Discover credit cards. Or you may simply write to American Cassette Ministries, Post Office Box 922, Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, 17108, in the United States of America. Maintaining the integrity of the Three Angels' messages for 27 years, American Cassette Ministries requests your continued prayers and financial support as we strive to provide you with the finest, most powerful spiritual messages available. Our one purpose in ministry, to prepare you and your loved ones to meet Jesus Christ. He's coming soon.